that this would be a word that would impact us, not just for this moment, but something that it will be always apparent in our hearts and our minds for the days, months, and years yet to come. And so filter the words that I share through the work and the power of the cross of Christ. In Jesus' name, amen. Honestly, I don't know how he does it. I mean, one moment he's really on top of things, and then the next moment he can be a little bit discouraged. And by no means is he perfect, because I've seen him make mistakes. I've seen him make sinful decisions. But when I hear him pray, sometimes it's the most amazing thing that you can experience with him. And I've been close enough on very occasions to hear him pray, to hear him give praises to God, for him to give thanks to the Lord, to grieve, to weep, to lament. And boy, we Jews know how to lament. Lament means to sorrow, to mourn, to grieve when things are not going the way we thought they would be going. Some people think, well, he deserves it. This is God getting him back. First thing you need to understand, leadership is not easy. You know, one day, everybody loves you when you're a leader in good standing, but boy, the next day, they can just flip the tables on you and they don't like you. Our first king was not so hot. In fact, he was really not even wanting the job. He just kind of got drawn in, and the people brought him forward and said, "This is going to be our king." And we all thought it was a great idea at the time, but how did we know that he would become a king like all the other kings that surrounded us? Once in power, he became somewhat of a dictator. And when my leader, my new king that I serve under all these years, when he stepped into the court of Saul, he became a mighty warrior. You know, the musicians of the day decided to craft a song about him. They had this song that said, "Saul has killed his thousands, but David has killed his tens of thousands." Now, you need to understand with musicians is that they sometimes over-exaggerate. Because when that song was running, being number one on the music stations of the day, he hadn't really killed 10,000, but everybody was so excited about David and what he was doing and all of the accomplishments. But I'll tell you, the song did not go over so well with one person. Saul had problems with envy. He was a jealous king. And he didn't like David. And that's kind of another whole story, but that's not what the story I want to talk about, because there would be countless times when Saul would try to take David's life. You see, being a leader is not easy. The second thing you need to understand is that life is not easy. David has now been king, and I have had the privilege of serving in his army as one of his leaders. For the most part, David's kingship has been going rather well, but there have been problems. I had told you that there was sin, and yes, David did sin, and you are right. You heard that he had sinned with Uriah's wife, Bathsheba. He got called on it. The prophet Nathan came to him. David immediately recognized that he had been in the wrong, because he had not only committed adultery, but then he had tried to cover it up, and then he had to get rid of her husband in order to marry her and try to keep the sin from getting bigger. And then there was the problem with Ammon, his son, Tamar, and Absalom. And Ammon and Tamar ended up having intimacy, and Absalom was absolutely furious that his brother would rape his sister, and then he went and had him murdered. And then, fearing David, his father, he immediately left Jerusalem and fled for many years before he was convinced that it would be okay for him to return back to Jerusalem. And he did. But he still never saw King David. And David never did go to Absalom. And so Absalom sat at the city gates. When people were coming in, he would always inquire, "Why are you here? What is it that you want to see my father about?" And people would start telling him their problems, and then Absalom would start giving them solutions to their problems, and they wouldn't go and see King David, and they started to walk away, and they were all amazed. You see, leadership is not easy, and life is not easy, and it can be a problem. One day, life is going so well, and then the next, it's not. And it's very easy that when certain bad things start to happen to you, and that when Absalom was starting to gain a groundswell of people, everybody just figured it was David's fault. This was God punishing him. Leadership is not easy. Life is not easy. Following God is not easy. Everybody just assumes just because you have God in your life, everything's going to go well. But it doesn't. For us Jews, that's not the way it works. We would like to think it works that way, but it doesn't. And everybody gets funny ideas when bad things happen to good people. Everybody starts thinking that God is doing something against them. Now, I'm sure you've never had those kinds of things, but I'll tell you. My fellow leaders within the army have often said, "Oh, yeah, God's really good with David, but he's not good to me." Funny how we think like that. Funny how we can assume that what God does for one person, God can't do for the next. But we are so convinced that when bad things happen, oh yeah, God is getting it. So I've come to realize that God had David's back. And again, like I've said, many of my fellow followers and those in the army have often said, "Oh yeah, it works for David, but it doesn't work for me." So on this one particular night, I heard him pray. We were out in the desert on the run. We had left Jerusalem. And I knew he knew the Lord because it was so personal in how he was talking to the Lord that night. And it was interesting because I only thought that our connection with Yahweh would only happen when we were in the temple, but not out in the middle of a desert. But for David, it didn't seem to matter where he was. He was connected. He lamented about the growing swell of numbers that were coming against him. I almost laughed when I heard him talking about that he thought that it was like tens of thousands of enemies. And I thought, David, how ironic. 20 years ago, songs were being sung about your great conquests of tens of thousands have died. But here and now, in the moment when it seems like it's a little bit dark, you're wondering if there's an enemy that's growing and building. You see, Absalom had been so successful sitting at the gate that he had now turned the people against the anointed king. There was even friends of David that had now left David's side, and now they were choosing to join up with the young guy, the handsome man. And before we knew it, we had to leave Jerusalem for fear that a civil war would break out and all kinds of innocent people within Jerusalem's city gates would be slaughtered because a son was wanting to take over a kingship that wasn't his to have. And so we lamented as we left the city gates that day, and we dropped down from the walls of Jerusalem and walked into the Kidron Valley and slowly made our way back up towards the Mount of Olives, lamenting, weeping, wailing. Even one of Saul's family members that still was existing began to pick up stones and had come with rotten fruit and was throwing it at David and calling him names. And one of my colleagues had said, "Give me the word, I'll take his head off." And David said, "No, leave him be. What if perhaps he might be right?" I couldn't believe the restraint because we were all so enraged that we were having to leave. We shouldn't have been the ones who should have left Jerusalem that day. But David knew God had his back. And when he continued in his prayer, David declared that Yahweh was his shield, and it was a word I had never heard before, because in the Hebrew, the word shield that he was describing was a shield that had never been made before. It was a shield that would protect you at the front and at your sides and at your back. What a curious kind of shield that would be. But that is how David described Yahweh's presence to him, that he was an all-encompassing, surrounding shield. Oh, we had known the stories. David taking out Goliath. David, when he was a shepherd boy, defeating a bear and a lion with his bare hands. David knew that Yahweh was his protector. It was always a question that always would come back to me. Do I know Yahweh as my protector? Do you know Yahweh as your protector? See, David's glory was not Jerusalem. David's glory was not having to be in the temple. David's glory was in the simplicity of knowing that Yahweh was his and his alone. God was enough for David. Here's David in this prayer. He's entrusting his kingship. He's entrusting the kingdom into the hands of Yahweh, lifting it up before the Lord. And he knew he could call out to God because God was hearing him and answering him. Sometimes we can pray and we can pray with confidence like David, but then sometimes we don't have that same confidence that the character of God is always listening. The character of God is always moving towards us. It's always responding to us. You see, when we left Jerusalem, David refused to take the Ark of the Covenant, the picture, the symbol of God's presence. But here, standing guard, only a few meters away from my king, I felt like I was in the temple itself. Because it wasn't limited to a temple experience. It was a relational connectedness that David had. And then, because of that confidence, and it led into the next element of what he prayed about, because his confidence in God began to swell, and he said, "Sleep came easy to me." It was somehow David had the capacity that when he would pray, he could lay his issues, his burdens down, and rest and gain strength. And oh, how do we need to have strength when it comes from sleep? It's not easy sleeping in a desert, because there's dirt and there's only rocks that form a bit of a pillow for your head. And then there's these things that like to visit you while you're sleeping. going up your tunic and around your head. And he thanked Yahweh for the ability that he sustained him, because God was providing safety and care and protection. No wonder he could rest, because he knew that. He knew then, in this prayer, his confidence shifts, because he now suddenly, from what he was wondering about at the beginning of his prayer, when he was thinking that there was tens of thousands of enemies, now he flips and says, the odds are completely in my favor, in contrast to my perceived enemies. I smiled. David, we're in the middle of a desert. We're running. We have scouts out looking for Absalom and his army that is out hunting for us. And yet you think the odds are in our favor? There was no fear in David now in this prayer, because his confidence was rising up. I will not fear, he said, even if there would be 10,000. God had his back. No matter what direction that it would come from, God had his back. David's prayer was letting him release all of the fears and the concerns and the problems of the rebellion into the hands of Yahweh himself. And his prayer had focused him back into the character of Yahweh. Yeah, there was a rebellion. It's still happening. We're still wondering, where is this all going to go? But David's perspective, as I heard him praying here and now, was now being changed, no longer lamenting, but now a sense of confidence. And this confidence led him to pray these two more items of petition before Yahweh, that he invited the Lord to rise up, that his confidence was so strong that he would come up and strike the mouths of those who were working against him. We did find out that one of David's top advisors, who David had leaned on so many times, had now started having a season of bad advice that was not working to Absalom's favor. Hope was being affirmed. He began to conclude his prayer, and he spoke in a way that God had taken care of all of his past deliverances, it would also happen now in this potential present situation. But David, this isn't a bear, and this isn't a lion. It's a vast army that your son has gathered together. The skeptics are out. The skeptics think this is payback for all of what you've done wrong. How can you be so full of hope that God will deliver you? And yet he came with the idea, God has my back. And then this last thing that he did in his prayer that I could not understand and was so odd about his petition. Here's the king of Israel outside of the capital city in the middle of a desert, and now he says, Yahweh, take care of my people. It's your people that kicked you out of your city. How can you even begin to lament for their well-being? And he's almost, in essence, forgiving them. He, the king, wanted the best for his own subjects, and that God's blessings would fall on them, even in this moment of rebellion. Wow. What a humble king I serve. What a humble king who can completely entrust his kingship, his kingdom, his people into the hands of Yahweh in the midst of rebellion and betrayal. Hold on a moment. There's a message that's just coming to me now. Yes. Really. Now. I'm sorry. I have to leave now. One of the messengers said that they've spotted Absalom and the army. They've figured out where we are. I need to go. We have to gather our men together. But just before I leave, I just want to remind you of one last thing. I hope you've heard my story that, do you know that God has your back? If you want to, I didn't make that up. Psalm chapter 3. Here it is. And I'm going to read it not from the NIV. I'll read it from the Passion Translation. It's a rather newer, contemporary feel. So you'll just sort of hear it, but you're going to also notice where I